I leaned against the windowsill and sipped my beer. The weather was schizophrenic. Appealing one minute, aggressive the next. Frenetic, like water breaking from a dam. "Ohio," I said. "Thank you for asking." "I got cousins there." "You don't." "Ay, niña, I got cousins everywhere. Speaking of, one of them is picking me up. We got errands. But he's holding some grade A shit." "Enticing. But I think I'm finally becoming happy. I think I mastered life, right here on this windowsill. I don't want to move too much." "You sure? Where are you meeting your man? We could drop you." "My man?" Jake was quicksand. Hours ago, my plan had been to talk to him rationally. He had promised. Maybe he hadn't bought the tickets yet. Maybe he wouldn't go for the whole month. Maybe I could meet them. But at that moment, I didn't want him. The man I was totally and completely devoted to was going away with another woman. And I was so fucking blind and tolerant that they thought I wouldn't have a shred of feeling about it. Or perhaps they simply didn't care. Finally, facts not colored by the weather or the voices and visions in my head. I didn't want anything. Not a drink, not a line, not a snack. I didn't even want to fidget. It was the freest I'd felt in months. The city does sleep. The windows darken and the streets vacate. New York dreams us. Wild, somnambulistic creatures, we move unhurried toward our own disappearance at dawn.
"Tess, that's not your beer."
Will's voice was far away. He was inside the plush noise of the bar and holding a spotless beer in his hand.
"I can't hear you,"
I said. I reached my hand out to touch the glass between us. I touched his face instead.
"Are you okay?"
He grabbed my hand. The day rushed back to me. I fell backward, slapping the ground.
"I'm fine."
Will's hands, Carlos's hands, lifting me.
"No more man hands."
"Come inside," Will said. I squirmed, but his hand was stuck on my back.
"Carlos, are you going east?"
"You're not going with him," Will said,
and now his hand was stuck to my shoulder.
"Are you crazy? You can't get into a car with a drug dealer."
"Don't be racist, Will. Now please leave me alone. I'm going east."
"Donde, niña?"
"Ninth between first and A."
As I said it, a black car with tinted windows pulled up. The front window rolled down when Carlos approached. I pulled my purse out of the bar through the window and put my beer inside it.
"Hi, Carlos's cousin," I yelled out. "Simone's house, please."
I opened the door and climbed over the seats with astonishing grace. 5. Throwing up mostly water. Throwing up curds in mostly water. Throwing up in your lap. Throwing up in your purse. Men yelling. Red and green blistered lights out the window. Gravitational forces on you instead of a seatbelt. Your face smashing into the seat back. You tried to hold on, but you were thrown like a doll. To their credit, I was dropped off exactly where I asked to be and given a bump of grade A shit. The front of my shirt was slick. The sidewalk felt dented. When I tried to stand up out of the car, my knees caved.
"Don't blame yourself, Carlos," I said.
I felt in control as I consoled him.
"I made some bad choices. You are not to blame."
Carlos and his cousin sped off sharply, squealing, and I leaned against a wall. I watched a couple walk out of their way to distance themselves from me, and I laughed at how bad my shirt smelled. I dug into my purse, and it was soaking wet. I shook beer off my phone, and it miraculously clicked on. "Hi, Simone," I texted. "It's Tess." "Hi. You said we could talk." "I'm outside, actually, if that's okay." "I'm going to ring the bell probably because you're not responding." "Oh, look whose bike I see. Hi, Jake." "Maybe you can just ask him to talk to me because I know he's there." "I'm sorry. I know it's late for you. You're old." "I'm not mad about France. No big D." We got in a stupid fight, but it wasn't that much. "Simone!" "I'm going to ring the bell again. I'm warning you." "Okay, no one is answering. I'm going home." "Tell Jake I'm sorry and I hate him. Whatever order you want." "I'm sorry that was me again. I know you're home." "I see his motherfucking bike." "France hurts my feelings. I'm leaving. Also, I'm sorry the restaurant closed. I care a lot. Too. Simone, if you're good at this job, what exactly are you good at?" I remember the sickly green Heineken light in the window of Sophie's. I remember the bathroom, my hands slipping every time I tried to cut a line. I remember my eyes in the mirror. I remember the Coke spilling into the sink. I remember the back of my thigh being pinched between the trash can and the wall when I was pushed against it. I remember someone's tongue, not being able to breathe. I remember my cheek on exfoliated concrete. The rest is a blessed darkness. The first time I woke up was a false alarm. My skin registered clothing, and I reached into my jeans pocket where I kept pills and broke off another piece of the Zanny bar and swallowed it. There was a glass of water next to the bed, but I didn't surface enough to reach for it. When I woke up again, it was to a sunset I didn't deserve. Not just me. No one could deserve it except newborns. The untarnished, the languageless. I stayed perfectly still, and the ceiling was violet. I searched myself for signs of pain, for the inevitable headache. All seemed calm. I took a bigger breath, preparing my body to sit up. My ceiling pinked and blushed. The windows were wide open. The wind had wrecked every book, shirt, or slip of paper. It was freezing. I moved my neck first, craned it, looking down. My jeans were on. My Converse were off, but my ankle socks were on, evidence of an outside presence. I didn't remember getting to my bed or to my apartment. I sat up a bit more. From my tailbone, the shame started, and with it came prongs of pain up my spine until it hit the base of my skull. I looked reluctantly at my shirt and moaned. The vomit had dried, but the blood was still damp in spots on my breasts and at the collar. It had already dried and rusted out on the pillowcases. I touched my nose, and flakes of blood came back on my fingers. There was a note safety pinned to my shirt. "Please text me so I know you're alive. Your roommate, Jesse." I patted the bed for my phone. It was dead, and there were beer droplets inside the screen. Movement made me ill. I ran to the bathroom, turned on the shower, and threw up. There wasn't much of anything left. Just extraordinarily gratifying dry heaves. My first real thought was, shit,
What time am I in today?
If I am qualified to give advice on anything, it is probably a hangover. Advil, marijuana, and greasy breakfast sandwiches from the bodegas do not work. Don't listen to chefs. They will have you drinking five-day-old beef stock or reheated menudo or pickle brine or wolfing down bags of White Castle burgers at 5 a.m. Mistakes. All of them. Xanax, Vicodin, or their opiate benzedrine cousins, Gatorade, Tums, and beer, do work. Dirty Dancing, The Princess Bride, Clueless. They work. Bagels sometimes work, but not with anything on them besides cream cheese. You think you want lox, but you don't. You think you want bacon, but you don't. Salt will promote your headache. You think you want Ritalin, Adderall, meth, any kind of speed. You don't. You're fucked for at least 6 hours, so the goal is to numb out. Toast works. Before you leave for your night out, leave yourself bread, a big bottle of your preferred color of Gatorade, a handful of prescription drugs, and a note with an emergency contact. I had none of these things. Somewhere in the middle of the night, as I watched old DVDs of Sex and the City on my beaten-up laptop, my lids barely qualifying as open, my hangover transitioned into a fever. I was irritated that my computer screen was shaking until I realized that it was on my stomach. I was so hot that I kept throwing off my sheets, my clothes, but the shaking was me, shivering. Initially, my sheets were stiff, my skin brittle. I touched my forehead and the sweat released. My pillows were wet. Then the heat rose again, chasing me. I couldn't catch my breath. I searched the apartment, but there wasn't anything, not even Advil. I put my winter coat over my pajamas and hid my head under a wool cap. I thought of Mrs. Neely when I was on the stairs, clutching the railing, talking to myself. It wasn't that cold when I got outside. Sweat was running down my sides and from my hairline. The bodega was two doors away, but I couldn't get there standing up straight. "It's you," the Pakistani owner said. "Hello." I held myself in the doorframe. He and I had developed a fondness for each other over the months. "You remember me last night?" He came out from behind the bulletproof glass. "No, sir, I do not." "You need to be more careful. It's not safe for young girls like you."
"I'm sick, sir."
"You're all red in the face."
"Yes, I'm sick."
I rolled through a wave of nausea.
"I need medicine."
"You need rest. You can't live like this."
"I have no intention of living like this much longer."
He didn't understand me.
"I will rest, I promise. I promise."
My vision faded, browning. I got scared and sat down on a stack of New York Times. I heard myself making sounds like crying, but there were no tears on my face. Just sweat at my temples, behind my ears. He had his hand on my back. "Can I call someone?"
"Please, I just need medicine. I have a fever and I'm alone. I need stuff like what a mom would get."
He called out into the back and his wife came out. She looked at me like I was a criminal. He talked to her in another language, and I took pauses between each breath, reassuring myself that I was still alive. The wife made her way around the store. Advil, water, a box of saltines, two apples, tea, a can of lentil soup. She pulled down a bottle of liquid NyQuil, assessed me, and put it back. She came over with the individually packaged capsules instead. Only two, she said. Your girls are good girls. He's so proud of them, I said to her. He had shown me photos of them many times. The eldest was in high school in Queens, applying to Ivy League colleges. I couldn't take her pity when she handed me the bag of items with no charge. I accepted because I hadn't brought my wallet. I'm sorry, I said. There's no excuse. I don't know how long it took me to get home. I thought about falling down and waiting for the police to come and take me to the hospital. I thought about screaming out, "Someone, please take care of me." I pressed against a rolled-down steel gate, spitting onto the concrete. The streets were empty. It was just me. So I said, "Fuck, it's just you." I climbed the stairs, cursing, dry-heaving. I made the mint tea they had given me. I wrapped an ice pack in paper towels and put it on my forehead, and when it got warm, I put it back in the freezer. I shook. I sweat. I cried. I held myself. I mumbled in and out of sleep. It went on like that, more or less, for 2 days. Do you know what I was? How I lived? That refrain ran through my head as I took the train into work. I was a gaunt reflection in the spotty windows, but possessed of a sparkling sense of clarity. That was a line from a poem I couldn't remember. I don't know when I started quoting poems. I don't know when I'd started ignoring the flowers as I walked through the grain market. I stopped in front of the large window on 16th Street, wanting to see if it looked different. Flower Girl was conducting her botanic orchestra, and behind her they were pulling down the chairs. The servers were congregated at the end of the bar, where Parker was making espressos. How much I had taken for granted. Being excited to walk through the door every day, making rounds to say hello to everyone, even in the days when no one responded. Flower Girl singled out a branch of lilac. I had smelled them since I'd come up from the train, cloying, heavy, human, but unripe, like a cold climate Sauvignon Blanc. That was the full circle, wasn't it? Learn how to identify the flowers and the fruits so I could talk about wine. Learn how to smell the wine so I could talk about the flowers. Had I learned anything besides endless reference points? What did I know about the thing itself? Wasn't it spring? Hadn't the trees shaken out their greens to applause? Isn't this what you dreamed of, Tess, when you got in your car and drove? Didn't you run away to find a world worth falling in love with, saying you wouldn't care if it loved you back? The lilacs smelled like brevity. They knew how to arrive and how to exit. Everyone was worried, Ariel said.
I came by and rang the buzzer, Will said.
I told them we speed dial police if you don't show today, Sasha said.
Whatever changes they had made to the restaurant were barely noticeable. We did have new sinks behind the bar. It was a lunch shift, and I didn't talk much. My head was still in the isolation of my rancid bedroom. I was unshakable. They did not arrive together, though I suppose they never did. Simone came in first. I went to the locker room and sat on a chair in the corner. I had no plan, but when she came in, she was not surprised to see me. We were following a script that I hadn't seen yet. I'm relieved you're all right, she said. I'm alive. She fiddled with her locker combination. I saw her go through it twice. I did not receive your text until much later, she said. Maybe, the first time in her life, she had been the one to break a silence. I don't check my phone at that hour. Of course. I was very worried. Of course, I could tell. I texted you back. My phone is broken. Tess, she faced me. She buttoned up her stripes and slipped out of her jeans. She looked clownish in that giant shirt. There is so much I don't know. I accepted it. That's life, right? I mean, what do you guys even really know about me? But I am an honest person. What you see is what you get.
Do you think someone has been dishonest?
I think you people are so far gone, you don't know what honest means.
The idealism of my youth.
Stop. I stood up. Stop. I see you.
Do you?
You're a cripple. I was surprised at how accurate it felt. You don't care about anyone but yourself. You certainly don't care about him. She paused.
Perhaps, she said.
She went back to dressing. Perhaps. You think I'm stupid. I'm not. I was just hopeful. She moved to the mirror and took out her cosmetics bag. I watched the concealer go onto the dark circles under her eyes. She pressed the matte paste against her crow's feet. She dropped her chin while she put on mascara. How had I never seen how morose her eyes were? She wore the lipstick to distract from them.
You are blessed with a rare sensitivity, she said. It's what makes people artists, winemakers, poets, this porous nature. However,
she paused and blinked her mascara into place.
You lack self-control, discipline, and that is what separates art from emotion. I do not think you have the intelligence yet to interpret your feelings, but I do not think you are stupid.
Jesus, that's lovely.
It's the truth. You can take it.
You both enjoy saying that. You love the truth as it applies to everyone else.
I never lied to you, Tess. I kept him away from you for as long as I could. I was explicit about what you were dealing with.
It's not normal, Simone. You both going away like this, not even bothering to tell me? It's not right.
Jake and I haven't traveled together in ages. It's overdue.
Was I really so threatening?
Don't flatter yourself.
Why don't you just take him? I said. Just take him. Have him. She turned back to me and said, immaculately,
Oh, little one, I don't want him.
I pressed my hands into my eyes. Of course. She wanted a Mr. Benson, Eugene, someone to deliver her to the rarefied world that she had always been entitled to, but never been able to access permanently. Not Jake, who wore the same underwear for days on end without noticing. She had been seducing and rejecting him since he was a child. And, of course, she didn't actually want him. And yet, I realized, looking at her, she swiped her lips. She swiped and swiped, and I still saw her immovable, sad eyes. Those men were gone, and he was all she had. I pity you, I said. My voice had lost its conviction.
You pity me?
When she turned to me, she wore the most antagonizing smile. You can have your diligence, and your self-control, and your cynicism disguised as professionalism, and your stunted ambition. I mean, honestly, Simone, what the fuck are you going to do? Are you going to get it through your head and leave? Or are they going to have to retire you? I guess we'll never know. All of us will be gone. Venom rose in her, colliding with mine. I loved it. I could feel her enjoying me, and I was ready for it. For whatever she threw at me, because I would have time to revise. She couldn't really hurt me. I was young, buoyant. Jake opened the door. We both turned to him. He was winded. Well, here we are, I said. He looked back and forth between us. Simone walked out. The door slammed. I could tell he had just woken up. His eyes were unadjusted to light and had a patina on them that could have been feelings, could have been pills, could have been sleep. He reached for me and I went unthinkingly. I looked for you, he said. I laid my head on his chest. He smelled like a deeper layer of earth, a secret blue room I kept in Chinatown. He kissed my forehead. No, I said, inhaling him. No, you didn't. I accepted his invitation to clandestino for a nightcap and an overdue conversation. I left immediately after my lunch shift, skipping my shift drink for perhaps the first time since I'd learned of its existence. When I got home, I poured myself a big glass of sherry and waited. The Shabbat sirens shot out over Williamsburg. I watched the sunset and the pigeons loop and swerve and reunite with their coops on the rooftops. I sat and waited while the night attached to the corners of buildings. Drums beat steadily. I ate canned sardines on toast and half a jar of cornichons and waited. He needed me. I hadn't mistaken that. I thought maybe we could survive without her blessing. I wanted to see Jake repentant. The ugly truth was that I could forgive him anything, as long as he still desired me. And, I thought as I walked into clandestino, that wasn't all of it. The need, the desire. Not anymore. When Jake and I had been fucking these past months, our binges on each other were constructing something behind our backs. The stubborn stains of intimacy marked our hands. I had to see if that could hold us on our own.
Oh, it's Tessie, said Georgie. What brings a real lady this far downtown?
Meeting my friend, I said. How's it going tonight?
Dead, he shrugged. First nice night. People are too happy for drinking.
New Yorkers are never too happy for drinking. I pulled up a stool. I'll just take a lager, whatever is up there.
You guys like the Brooklyn, right?
Yes, we do. I wanted to cry, but batted my lashes instead. Brooklyn would be lovely. I realized that fake plastic trees was playing over the speakers. I hadn't listened to it in years, and when I had, on repeat in the bathtub, I hadn't really understood what it meant to be worn out. I couldn't shrug the song off. So I sighed and said to Georgie, with my face in my hands, Misery, will you just turn it up? I didn't even notice when Jake was next to me. Hey, he said. There were lilacs in his hand. He apologized for being late. Jake's crooked teeth, the stubble hiding the sharpness of his chin, those otherworldly eyes. The lilacs and their melancholy. Narcissism. Mystery. He touched my cheek, but I was still in the song. His touch felt like a faded reproduction of something that had once knocked me off my feet.
You're so skinny.
I was sick.
That sucks.
He nudged the flowers toward me.
Don't you like lilacs?
You know they're my favorite, I said. You want a prize for paying attention? I moved them to the side, and Jake put his helmet up on the bar. Georgie set down Jake's beer and retreated from our silence. Jake sipped, and I matched him. I saw your bike at her house. One of the few things I remember from that night. He didn't say anything. Because I blacked out. It sounded accusatory because it was. He turned on me.
You think it impresses me that you know how to hurt yourself?
I leveled his gaze back at him. Yes, I do. He wanted to bite me. He wanted to pull my hair out. I could see it churning in him. His eyes, his chest, his fingers. It was unavoidable. The ignition when he reached for me. How I would strain against my clothes to get closer to him. How his breathing would turn ragged. A sound that made my body liquefy. And we would stop thinking. I'm pissed, I said, leaning back from him. That was the first time I didn't throw myself on top of the fire he laid before me. The restraint made me feel old. I'm sorry, he said, as if he just remembered the protocol. Seriously, I wanted to meet you. I was going to. I fully intended to. This is the part where you give me the excuse. I fell asleep over there. I tore off tiny shreds of my napkin. You fell asleep in her bed, is what you meant to say.
Come on, you know it's not
like that. Yes, I know it's not like that. Not everything is something. He coughed. Here's something. She's bad for you. She would abandon you without a moment's notice. It was like he hadn't heard me.
I know how she gets, but she comes around. You will too. We're all a little off from the restaurant being closed.
No, I said. You're not hearing me. I will not be placated, Jake. You two have never let anyone close because you would have to look at how fucked up it is, whatever it is. You would have to explain why a grown man and woman who are not together still share a bed, vacation together, or why you've never had a real relationship with another woman. You're 30 years old, Jake. Don't you want a real life?
There's no such thing as a real life, princess.
This is it.
Take it or leave it.
Enough with the life is short and painful and you die alone bullshit. What a fucking scam that is. You never have to take any risks. You deserve better. His knee was bouncing. I watched the anxiety tense him, like when he got restless behind the bar. I rested my hand on his thigh and it stilled. You shouldn't go to France for a month. You hate the French and their smug, racist version of socialism. I elicited a smile. All my reliable tricks. I had a new one to try on him tonight. It was directness. It was truly my last one. I want you to quit with me, or we can transfer. You need a change, and I want to be a server. He cleared his throat. We kept drinking. I felt alone like I hadn't since before I moved to the city. Like I would never connect with another person for as long as I lived. Just think about it, I said.
My voice was desperate.
I heard it, but couldn't control it.
I have.
He blinked rapidly. He looked up at the lights. I kissed his hands and filthy fingernails. So many things he never said. I wondered who Jake would be if he said all the things.
Say it. I remember the first time I saw you.
That's all I get?
You surprised me.
That was all I was going to get, I said. I remember the first time I saw you, too.
Barbs of nostalgia sank in me, bringing a terrible weight, ringing with distance that I resisted. I had vowed to myself, since that first day of this new life, to stay in the present tense, to keep my eyes forward. I think his hands were on my neck, in my hair.
I can't leave, he said.
You can. This is still good between us.
I can't.
You mean you won't?
All right, Tess.
You're a coward, I said. A cripple and a coward. Wine woman and sweaty boy. Simone had been right. Our senses are never inaccurate, just our interpretations. This wasn't on them. It was on me. Do you remember that morning you let me pick the record? His routine had never strayed. A cigarette, the stovetop espresso, a second cigarette, and the day's record. That morning he had woken himself up hiccuping. He had been so scared. He clutched at me, still asleep, and I kissed his temple. I teased him about his hiccup phobia. He laughed. As a reward, I got to pick the record. I put on Astral Weeks, and when Sweet Thing came on, he said, "This one deserves a dance." We danced. Him, bare-chested and stretched-out underwear. Me, in his shirt with no pants on, moving in circles on the carpets under the gauze of cigarette smoke. That was the morning I committed the first sin of love, which was to confuse beauty and a good soundtrack with knowledge. He should have asked me, "What morning? What record?" But he said, with clarion eyes, "Van Morrison?" I nodded, shook my head, nodded. "I know you were happy. I felt it. I know." God, how I loved him. Not him exactly. Let me try again. I loved his ghost. What had he said to me about his mother? How impossible is it to forget the stories we tell ourselves, even when the truth should supersede them? That was why he adored me for a minute. Because I saw a beautiful, tormented hero. Rescue and redemption. I never saw him. All promise. The new girl. I waited as long as I could for him to say something. He stared at the bar and scratched at his scalp under his hat, a gesture I had consumed and memorized. I grabbed bar napkins and patted them on my cheeks, wiped my nose. I kissed the corner of his lips. He tasted perfect. The salty, the bitter, the sweet. I felt him switch off. I knew I would be fucked for a long, long time. I grabbed the lilacs, said goodbye to Georgie, and slid off my stool. The lilacs shed as I walked the bridge. My phone buzzed twice, and I turned it off. The city was radiant, and I felt untouchable. I experienced the boundlessness that ships cut from their moorings must feel. I experienced again that feeling of having money, paying the tolls, of being allowed to enter the race. Yes, I felt the freedom again, even if I couldn't quite recapture the hope. I could have walked all night. All the times I had been denied entrance, all the times I'd asked permission. But it was my city, too. 6. So what if the gold had rubbed off the feather pin she had in her periwinkle fedora? A lot of important people ate at our restaurant. Former presidents and mayors, actors, writers who define generations, financiers you could recognize by their hair. We had plenty of special needs diners who weren't famous at all. A blind woman who had the specials read out loud to her. Men with boyfriends on Fridays and wives on Sundays. Eccentric, art-collecting men who sat at the bar, ordered a martini, and then drank an entire bottle of red wine for their lunch. Why did I love Mrs. Neely so much? She was fragile, a rare, endangered species of bird, the way she fluttered in and out with her hats and stockings and kitten heels. Sometimes, I would watch her from across the room, and she would be staring at nothing. I wondered if I would be a woman content to stare into space, remembering her misses and near misses, her history. Hey, Nick, can I grab the flurry? Don't top her off, Fluff. Come on. She's gonna pass out. I sighed. So she passes out. Isn't that the privilege of old age? You can sleep whenever and wherever you want? He winked and passed the bottle. Thank you, Mrs. Neely said, smoothing a pin curl next to her ear. That bastard at the bar pours me short. He thinks I don't know, but I know. Nicky's all right. He just takes some reminding every now and then. Are you enjoying the flurry? It's my favorite of all the crews right now. Why? The only question Mrs. Neely had ever asked me before was why I didn't have a boyfriend. Her tawny apple cheeks were high in a smile, and her eyes were lucid. This was a good day for her, and I believed she would keep visiting us forever. I picked up her glass and smelled it. So, Beaujolais is like this hybrid. A red that drinks like a white. We even put a chill on it. Maybe that's why it has trouble. It doesn't quite fit. No one takes Gamay seriously. Too light, too simple, lacks structure. But I swirled the glass, and it was so optimistic. I like to think it's pure. Fleury sounds like flowers, doesn't it? Girls love flowers, she said judiciously. They do. I put her wine down, then moved it 2 inches closer to her, where I knew the field of her focus began. None of that means anything. It just speaks to me. I feel invited to enjoy it. I get roses. Child, what is wrong with you? There's no roses in the damn wine. Wine is wine, and it makes you loose and helps you dance. That's it. The way you kids talk, like everything is life or death. It's not? You ain't even learned about living yet. I thought about buying wine. About how I would scan the different Beaujolais crews at the liquor store. The Morgan, the Cote de Bruy. The Fleury would be telling me a story. I would see different flowers when I looked at the labels. I thought about the wild strawberries dropped off from Mountain Sweet Berry Farm just that afternoon, and how the cooks laid out paper towels and sheet trays in the kitchen, none of them touching, as if they would disintegrate, their fragrance euphoric. They were completely different from the strawberries in the grocery store. They were as puckered and pruned as my nipples, The one time that Jake had made me come just from touching them. I thought about how I would never again buy tomatoes out of season. Can I call you a cab this evening, Mrs. Neely?
A cab? Goodness, no.
I will ride the bus as I have every day since I was old enough to walk.
But it's dark.
She waved me off. She was peaceful, but I noticed that her lids were getting heavy, that her head dove slightly each time she blinked. How will I know you got home okay? Something in my voice gave it away, that I was scared I would never see her again. What if she stopped coming? No alarms would go off in the restaurant. How many Sundays would it take before we noticed?
Tess, don't you worry about old Mrs. Neely. If you ever reach my age, you'll find that death becomes a need, just like sleep.
I knocked on his office door at 10 p.m. after tracking his movements all night. Howard was such a minor element of service for me, but I had unconsciously memorized his habits. I realized that he always came to the coffee station at 7, and then spent 2 hours on the floor, and then by 9, barring any emergencies, went back up to his office in order to get out by 11. 2 hours on the floor felt like nothing, a cushy job by our standards. But then I thought about all my lunch shifts, and how he was always here before we got in. And 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on a good night sounded awful. It never showed on him. "Come in," he said. Howard was settled back in his chair, reading glasses on his head, a stack of papers in front of a desktop computer from the Paleolithic era.
"Tess,"
he sat up.
"What a surprise."
"I know I should have made an appointment. I'm sorry. I just saw that you were still here."
"My door is always open."
I took a seat and I looked at him. I didn't know exactly what I wanted, but I knew that I had exhausted my resources downstairs. The phase in which I had existed so happily was over. Howard had put me in stripes, and I needed him to tell me what was next.
"I'm curious about opportunities in the company."
I was hesitating. With the door closed, I felt oddly vulnerable, even though the dinner crew was still finishing up.
"I'm sorry, I didn't plan a speech."
I saw a bottle of Four Roses on his bookshelf. "Can I have some of that?" He took his glasses off his head and retrieved the bottle without standing up. His eyes never left me. On his desk were random samples of glassware, some of them quite dusty. He picked up a rocks glass and used his blue checkered tie to wipe it out.
"I don't have ice," he said as he passed it to me.
He didn't pour himself one.
"No need,"
I said, and took a big sip. "You said that I could be a server." He nodded.
"So, I want to be one. I'm really good at this job. I'm better than all the other back waiters, and most of the servers."
"You are gifted. That's why I have you first in line."
He hedged, not sure where I was going. I wasn't sure where I was going.
"Tess, we are totally transparent at this company. You see the server schedule. You know how it works. There's no space available right now."
"Okay," I said. I drained my drink. "Maybe you can make space. Or maybe you can place me." He raised his eyebrows and reopened the Four Roses. He poured more for me and some for himself.
"I've made a considerable investment in you. I'd like to see you grow with us."
"I would too. Honestly, I don't want to leave. Even when I am so fucking sick of this place I could die. It's my home.
But I also know that you don't really run this place. Simone does. And she would never allow me to be on her level.
Don't pass that along to the owner.
He wasn't insulted. He was interested.
You and Simone, don't tell me this is a story about a boy.
It's not. It is, but it's not. It's about me. Come on, Howard, I said, leaning back, trying it out. I know you don't like Jake, or he doesn't like you, or whatever. And I know you and Simone are, whatever, friends. But I should be a server here. I know plenty of people doing things that they could be fired for immediately. It's not even the drinking and the drugs and the theft. It says in the handbook that if you're more than 15 minutes late 3 times, then you were to be fired. No one would blame you. Certain people who have been showing up 30 minutes late for years.
Tess,
he laughed.
You're out for blood.
I'm not. I know you won't do it. Firing him would be firing 2 people. But let me tell you, Howard, from the inside, that stagnant water stinks. It's just a fact. And this restaurant isn't getting any younger. We have real problems. The walls are crumbling, the food is stale, and yes, people still come, but because of nostalgia. They aren't excited to eat here. Now, some fresh blood, some unjaded servers who actually fucking care, wouldn't hurt the atmosphere, the reputation, or the bottom line. I finished my drink again. But you know all this.
I like to hear you say it.
He refilled me. You might be the only restaurant manager who has leather-bound Freud in his office.
I consider it an instruction manual.
We were silent while I scanned his books.
You wanted to be something else? An analyst? Anthropologist? Architect?
Why do you ask?
The same reason everyone asks. You couldn't possibly choose this job. You must have fallen into it accidentally.
And yet, here you are.
Here we are.
We fell into silence again, and I felt like I was running out of time. All my wants crowded forward. I wanted an ally. I wanted my job. I wanted to hurt them. Someone knocked. Misha poked her head in.
I'm leaving,
she said awkwardly, looking at me.
Okay,
I said. Excuse me one moment, Tess, Howard said, straightening his tie. When he left, I stood up over his desk, scanning the papers for any edges of her script. It was just a few days ago that I had found the vacation request. What if I hadn't found it? No fight with Jake, no night of self-abuse, no fever, no truth. I would be downstairs right now, revisiting the Pui Fume. When were they going to tell me? I heard the door handle, and I took my seat again.
Are you going to place Misha?
It was a card I was unsure about playing, but I couldn't take it back.
Misha?
He asked without concern.
As far as I know, she's content where she is.
Oh, I just thought I read in the handbook about, like, sexual congress between management and staff not being allowed, blah, blah. I don't know.
I believe that is how the rule goes.
He glanced at a clock on his desk. Do you mind if we pause this meeting?
I still have a few hours of work, but I'd like to come to a satisfactory conclusion about your prospects. Maybe even a plan for the upcoming months.
Okay. I felt like a failure. I'm the 3 p.m. tomorrow.
You can meet me back here at 1.
1 a.m.? I exhaled. Okay.
My mind spiraled. I mean, they might still be closing.
You can ring at the back door and we can meet in the other office. No need to disturb the nightly staff party.
He put the cork in the bottle of whiskey.
I'll bring ice.
All right.
All right,
he said. He smiled and tapped the computer mouse, dismissing me. The screensaver dissolved. It was just business, after all. Even at the time, I understood that Park Bar was unremarkable unless you worked in those five square blocks. One of those bars that survives because of its location. Nobody ever went out of their way to go there. It was somewhere you ended up. An oasis for the stranded. But it was a rarity in the city. Not quite a dive, and not quite a nice place. Decent wines by the glass. They were smart painting everything black. You could never tell how dirty it was. The bathrooms let you know that people behaved badly. But when you walked by the open windows and saw people sipping unpretentiously in the twilight, you envied them. It was nearly empty when I got there. At first, I couldn't make out anyone I knew. I had a vision that they'd all stop going there, that they had a new place and hadn't told me about it. Then my eyes adjusted. Sasha was blinking brilliantly at me. I sat down next to him. Terry gestured toward the bottles.
I don't know, I said to him. I'm so tired of drinking. Just pick for me.
Sasha pulled something out of his pocket and slid it over to me. I thought it was going to be a bag of Coke, but it was a small jewelry box.
What do you think?
I opened it to find a pair of earrings, opals set in gold.
I send them out tomorrow. A surprise for my mama. She's gonna flip the moon when she sees them.
I closed the box. You miss her?
Yeah. She an old cunt, more fucked up than even me, but I love her.
I started crying. Sasha was skeptical.
You got your health, baby monster.
Do I?
Let me tell you about self-respect, okay? When you do the things, you fucking do them. And when the consequences come, you take them up the ass too, okay?
Trust me, I am.
Now, in the beginning, I think this girl, not so smart. We throw in the garbage in 2 weeks. But all right, you a baby monster. You a little cunt. You gonna make it. And I say, I'm gonna talk straight to her. Cause everyone else trying to stick the dick in her pants or make her over like little dolls. But okay. I tell her straight. And what you do?
I didn't listen.
I wiped under my eyes.
You know they're going away for a month? To France?
Sasha pursed his lips at me.
This, my shock face.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, they fucked up. You know Simone's are fucking and sucking him when Jackie was a Jackie baby. Not like the elevator going up from there.
Wait, like literally or metaphorically?
Whatever the fuck that mean. Oh, please, you know all that. I don't kiss and tell. Jackie had looser lips when we used to snort it all and scrape up the table for seconds. You know how I'm saying? Who keeping track of this shit? When Jake was a baby?
Whatsoever.
Who's knowing anything? He was too young when they start fucking each other all up. And Simone, not such a sweet as pie face like you. But why you liking the past so much, Bartart? That shit goes dark, then it nobody business. And none matters the least bit.
None matters the least bit, I repeated. It was bright in Park Bar. Terry should have dimmed the lights,
It was all too exposed, including my beleaguered insights, which began